Going back to Ohio, baby. Time to talk to our friend, ESPN Commanders reporter and host of the John Keim Report, Mr. John Keim. What up, Johnny? How are you, bud?
What up, fellas? How are you? I'm all right.
What's up, man?
We're good, dude. There's a daytime Nats game. We're always good. What are kind of your biggest takeaways through 6 days of Burgundy and Gold training camp?
One, the defense is going to be a lot more versatile and have a lot more pressure packages than I think they had last year. And I think it's a large part because the secondary, the corners are just better. And it has, I think the coverage has been pretty good. Two, they clearly need number 17 out there at receiver because they're not getting a lot of separation when he's not out there, with him not out there. And then, you know, I think those are two of the bigger ones. Like, I think Trey Amos will be really good. I think he looks really good. I'm really curious to see how, when he's going up against other teams' receivers and other top receivers, what it looks like then, because we have that's, to be honest, like one of the things that I'd love to see McLaurin in camp for is just to see him go against Amos, to see, you know, just to see him work against a top quality NFL receiver, you know, that the kind he's going to face during the season, mm-hmm. go up against Debo and all that. But like McLaurin is a different kind of guy than Debo Samuel. So anyway, but those are some of the early things that have jumped out. And yeah.
Has your questions about Lattimore been answered thus far?
No, because the question is, can he stay durable during the season? So, you know, I do think, and again, like that's where you'd like to see him against working against McLaurin to see what does it look like against the guys that he was brought here to help shut down or at mm-hmm. least help to quiet limit. And I think the biggest question with him is, can he stay durable during the season? And he looks, there are times when you watch him, like, you know, he talked about this in the spring, you can see he can drive on the ball better. I think, you know, understanding what you don't see are like big mess ups, which I think, you know, tells you that this group understands the defense and what they're asked to do in coverage. But can he hold up during the season? We won't know that until the season begins. So that to me is the biggest thing.
So it's interesting with when we get asked that, right? Because I get asked that, you get asked that, B gets asked that. And yet my biggest takeaway, somebody just asked me this in the hallway. Do they need 17? Yes. I still think that'll get done. We'll talk about that in a moment. But my biggest takeaway remains Jaden Daniels gives this team a chance regardless. He's just so impressive and so good. And like, because we're looking at the totality of everything and, you know, can Amos get out there? What is Bill Merritt's role? Like, there's a million. Caden Medrano made a couple flash plays the other day, all mm-hmm. that stuff, right? Sometimes we lose sight of just how great Jaden is. And he's been super impressive.
Yeah, and the other thing that you don't see in these things is the impact always of the legs, because that's a huge part of his game. It's not something he's not a run. We know he's not a run first guy, but that's a heck of a weapon to have in your pocket. And you're not going to see it a ton in these practices, right? And if you're playing man coverage against them, we know they're going to throw a lot of fade balls, but we also know, you know, if you're a defense, you're kind of playing with fire by going man against them, because it opens up avenues for him to take off and extend drives. And then, you know, then you can work on finding the receivers on other plays, right? But he extends drives all the time. So yeah. And the other thing with him, the thing I never worried about with him is, you know, I always go back to the best thing you heard last summer, last spring, was the work he put in, the kind of work he put in away from the field. And that is still true, which is why I don't worry about where he goes. Like, you know what I mean? In terms of where his career is going to go, it's going to keep ascending because it's just what he does, right? And mm-hmm. so, yes, they definitely need McLaurin out there because he's a weapon that they don't have otherwise. And I think it also makes Debo Samuel better on some of the underneath stuff, right? And it makes Zach Ertz better. But you know, I think with number five there, you're always going to have a chance. Always.
I totally agree. Talking with our friend John Keim from ESPN. You can give him a follow at John_Keim, K-E-I-M. Check out the John Keim Report wherever you get your podcast. What have you thought of Bill Merritt? Clearly, you know, it's been pretty exciting watching him. He's made some really good plays. There was one in that padded practice that stood out to all of us. But also understanding it's a crowded room and getting work in camp doesn't necessarily directly equate to, you know, having 600 rushing yards this fall.
Right. And I think, you know, it's always hard with running backs to fully gauge where are they really. Because, like, you know, I mean, Brian, you know this. Like, mm-hmm. when you're not in pads and hitting and taking guys to the ground, you know, it's always like, you know, the defensive back comes, oh, I'd have gotten him there. I'd have gotten him. And the running back's like, I would have trucked your butt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you don't know. And I go back to, like, when if you remember when Larry Johnson was here the one year, and how, like, everybody's raving about how good he looked in training camp, and then he was, you know, getting 2.2 yards per carry once the season began because it was an illusion, right? So I say that, but then I'll flip it around and say when Alfred Morris was here, before they put pads on, you could see traits that, like, hey, if this is one reason why he could be good. And it was like the forward lean, always, you know, getting extra, you know, fight, you know, his balance through the vision, right? You could see that stuff. And I think with Merritt, you see some traits mm-hmm. like, okay, this is why I'm intrigued by him. And you saw it on film. He runs with violence, not out of control, but violent. And I think that's a very good thing. And Dan Quinn talked about the quote unquote violent cuts. And to me, that comes from confidence, vision, you know, all that stuff, right? So I think, like, that's why I'm really intrigued to see him. I think he's got a shot because of that. And even watching him be, I don't know what you see, but, like, a couple of times I've seen him run some routes, like, he's gotten open against some guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think he catches the ball better than I anticipated just because he didn't play last year. He played one game.
Yes.
And I think that's why, to me, he's so intriguing because there's, like, okay, what would it have looked like had he played all year for Arizona? Where might he have gone? I even asked him that yesterday. He's like, it's not something he's worried about because he's here and this is where he's at, right? So, yeah. You know, I think, but I am definitely intrigued by him because I think he has something to offer.
I think the thing about him, for me, his cuts are sharp. You know, you find a lot of receivers and running backs that round a lot of their cuts.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that. He's foot in the ground, he's gone the other direction.
Yeah.
And that's going to help him out big time. But
for sure.
Have you noticed, like, I know if you look at the offensive line, big than defensive line, they look bigger. Do you see something different that tell you the outcome will be better this year?
Well, I think I go back to, first of all, the secondary, right? And I think you have corners who can hold up better in various coverages than you had last year, period. And, Amos is just better than what they had last year, right? I think he will be. And Sam is still inside. Lattimore has to hold up, but I think as a group, they're just better. It gives you more of a chance to, I think, hold up to allow the pressure to get there. I think what you also see is a lot more different variety of fronts, right? Like, you can put your pass rush out there with some bigger guys like Jacob Martin, Daron Payne, Javon Kinlaw, and, you know, Dorrance Armstrong. So if they run the ball, I think you have guys who can still handle some of that, right? Because, like, if a second long, teams could run on them last year and get 6 yards. I think with the size, you'd be better equipped to handle that. That's, you know, again, everything on paper right now, it all sounds great, and, you know, we'll see. But I think you have more ability. You can throw in the Eddie Goldmans and Kinlaw. You can build a really big front with Kinlaw moving, you know, playing end with their 3D tackle sets with Payne and whether it's Newton or Payne and you have Dietrich Wise at one side and then Kinlaw at another and two more D tackles inside. Like, that's a bigger group, but I think they all, like, Kinlaw can, they all can rush the passer to a certain level, right? And I think, so that's why I say, I think you just, there's more depth up front and that should help. If it doesn't, then it'd be very disappointing. But I think, don't you think? I mean, I think,
yeah,
like, that's what I've seen. And, you know, more guys standing up and rushing, you know, Dorn standing up and rushing and seems to be effective with it. Now, here's the other thing. We don't always know what this means until the season begins. Like, we've seen some years, too, a couple years ago, like, oh, this side of the ball looks really good. And then you get in the season, you realize they look really good because the other side is really bad. And, you know, I don't think that with this offense for sure, right? But, you know, you don't know, like, to what degree will it be better? Will it be enough better? But I do think the depth is, like, that. I think that jumps out. Like, watching the depth, you see, like, the second unit or the second groupings, even some of the third groupings, going against some of the backup linemen. Like, these are guys who have started in the NFL who are working against backups. But it just shows you, to me, that it's, there's improved depth. Guys who were rotational guys last year, some of them are going to be cut this year.
Well, dude, I mean, just to that point on the O-line, two of your starters last year who played fairly well in Allegretti and Wiley, if everything breaks right, once Cosme's back, are probably backups. And that's really versatile, you know, important depth on your offensive line.
And I'll say this, I think Wiley gives them, he's a very good insurance policy for them if Connolly is not ready. And I don't know that he's going to open the season as a starter. I think it's way too early to assume that he will. But it's much like when you had like Lucas and Brandon Coleman last year, where like, okay, Coleman's not quite ready. You can put Lucas out there and get through the early part of the year until the rookie is ready. And I think they can do that here as well. So, you know, I think when Cosme comes back, if Connolly becomes, you know, whenever he wins that job, now you're looking at, if you have Allegretti and Wiley as backups, like, you're in really good shape. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's, but it, how long does it take to get to that point? That's what we don't know. And then when Cosme comes back, what does it look like for him when he comes back? You know, and so that, I think there's still questions there. I've always thought too, and I don't know what you guys think, but I've always thought with this line, because of some of these questions, because you have a new left guard who's going to learn that spot, Brandon Coleman, I think that's where he will be well suited. But then you have Cosme coming back from the injury. You have a rookie adapting. I think with this line, like, second half of the year is when it should really start to take off. Whereas last year, I felt like that's when they kind of started to slide.
Yeah, they did. I think that Biotis injury about halfway through the year really impacted everything.
Yeah. Hey, listen, that's where Allegretti can help too, because he's worked. We've seen him working at center, and I think, you know, I don't know how effective it'll be, but I would just say, like, that's, you know, backup center is something that, you know, would be a help.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm talking with our friend John Keim, ESPN.com Commanders. You can read all his work there. Check out the John Keim report here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the best HVAC products in the DMV. So let's finish where everything finishes right now. Talking Terry McLaurin. These sides aren't very close.
No.
I think we all know that. Not a lot of momentum. What, if any, impact do you think the Courtland Sutton deal in Denver makes on the Commanders Terry McLaurin conversation?
I mean, it's another floor for receivers who are pushing 30, right? And clearly, he's been a better player than Courtland Sutton. But to what degree, how much better is the key, right? So I think I don't think it necessarily gives him leverage or more momentum for sure. And I think, you know, again, like, if you're Washington, you can look at, okay, can you give him $4 million more per year? Is that, like, how much more is he worth in the market compared to a Sutton? So, you know, I always thought this was going to be a very tricky one. I think you did too. So, I mean, because the age thing, it's real, and, you know, it can't be dismissed. And that's always been the sticking point here. So, and I don't think that's changed, and I don't think the Sutton deal, I don't think it helps him. So, you know, but I do, he's better than Courtland Sutton.
Certainly.
He is. So I look at this right here. How much is Debo making this year?
Was it 17 and a half, something like that?
What was the total cap number?
They actually helped their cap by converting it to bonus.
So he takes on how much more?
It's all guaranteed. Like, it's 17, 18 mil.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's a free agent next year.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they can get the guarantees are what matter above all else.
Of course.
Like, getting caught up in the AAV. I think if they can get the guarantees north of 50, it gets really hard for all parties to say no. And maybe that's 2 years at 28 and you're done. Like, are you really going to get caught up? And the you could write the deal to make it look like anything, right? Like, you can write it to be a four-year, $110 million deal. But if at the bottom line gets you 2 years and $53 million guaranteed, I feel like you get a signature.
Yeah, and I think Tariq Hill had, that's about what he had, what, $52, $53 million guaranteed last year. And he, of course, was going to turn 30. So, or he either was 30 or going to turn play at 30. That could. And I think the hard part for this team, too, is clearly whether people believe it or whatever, they want McLaurin back. Like, they understand, like, what his value is to this team and the area. I think there's, and there is a heavily analytics-based group, right? But what I think you're also, if you're looking at this, if you're a McLaurin fan, you can be myopic and say, pay him. They can't be myopic with any of this. And you have to look at, okay, you have this extension here. Well, next year, if it all goes well, you could have Laremy Tunsil for an extension. Deron Payne's contract will be a conversation point after the season, right? Marshawn Lattimore, what if he plays well? Do you extend him? You have Frankie Louvu will be so, like, there are multiple guys coming up that you have to also worry about them. And like Louvu, if he has a big year, is going to get bigger, much bigger. You know, will get a really good deal because he's still, in that prime. So those are things that they are having to weigh in this entire situation. So, and then of course in a couple of years you have Daniels, who's going to have a mega deal.
Right.
So I think all those things weigh on that. And, for McLaurin, he's clearly been a very good player for them. We know that. We've seen it. We know what he means to this team, to the community, to the locker room. But, I think it's always been a tricky one because depending on how intent they are about getting it above a certain amount, and he seems pretty resolute, I think it's going to be difficult to get what I think they really, really have wanted. So can both sides, one go up, one go down, and reach that? Because you don't want this hanging over your head during the season. If you're, if you're the team, you don't want that. If you're McLaurin, you'd like to have that security for the next few years. Because what if you don't go? What if you go out and you don't have the kind of year you have? Well, we can all say, well, they can just franchise tag him. But what if they get to, well, it's $30.4 million. Do you want to do that? And then he's got to hit the market. And then, Like, so I think there's a lot of things at play here. The injury factor is always a factor, right? So there's just so much at play. But I think, both sides are going to, in any situation, both sides have to give something to make it work.
Yeah.
They're right.
One thing that could be really interesting is looking at Louvu this time next year, and maybe they get it done way earlier, who knows? But Louvu, the situations with him coming off an expiring contract. Terry's birthday is September 15th, week two, week three. On September 15th, Terry turns 30. Next year, week two, week three, on September 19th, Louvu will turn 30. Mm-hmm. Just kind of interesting parallels there.
Yeah.
Different positions, different accomplishments, but interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, it's funny because, for McLaurin's point, I did it. He's only been in the league 7 years, and he, when he was at Ohio State, his first couple of years, he didn't play. So feeling's like, hey, yes, I'm going to be 30, but I don't have that same mileage as others. But they're going to point to the history, and it's like the history for receivers at that age is not that they can't play, but it's just that the effectiveness starts to go down at a certain point. And then do what is the number you're comfortable paying somebody in not this year, because this year he's playing under 30, right? But when he's 31, 32, maybe 33, what are you comfortable paying knowing the history of receivers? It's why I say, with McLaurin, you're looking at, he's going to look at himself and I'm different. And they're going to have to look at the numbers and say, well, we don't know, because who does know? But it's why I've always thought it would be a difficult one because
it's complex.
It's complex. And I think both sides, you can say like, okay, I get it. You know, I mean, I understand why you want to feel valued this way. I mean, who doesn't? So, you know.
Mm-hmm. For sure. John, thank you, man. We'll see you in the morning.
Be cool, brother.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
That's our guy, John Keim. Give him a follow at John_Keim, K-E-I-M. Check out the John Keim Report. Coming right back with some Nats news before Nats baseball. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Trade deadline lurking for baseball, and the Nats have made their first move.
All right.
This has been widely reported. I saw from Jeff Passan first. I'm reading from Mark Zuckerman. Andrew Chafin and Luis Garcia are both headed to the Angels. In return, they're getting minor leaguers Sam Brown, a first baseman, and Jake Etter, who's a left-handed pitcher. Those guys are in the minors. This is what's going to happen, right? I don't think we got much of a surprise. But I'm reading this from Andrew Golden. You got to like this. The Nats got 10 appearances out of Luis Garcia, who they claimed off waivers, and 26 appearances out of Chafin. They got him on a minor league deal, and they turned those expiring contracts into a controllable pitcher and a first baseman. Not a bad return. You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see plenty of these.
That's the approach you got to take with this team.
Right.
Wait and see.
Right. I am excited. I'm going to the Nats game Sunday. Shout out to Bennett. I'm fired up to go. And that dude Mizorowski is pitching for the Brewers. So get to see a young fireballer, which should be pretty cool.
All right.
Excited about that.
I may be there Sunday. I just thought about it now.
Yeah, make it happen. Make it happen, Captain.
Guy hit me a thing today. Said something might come into the game.
There you go.
That's the third, right?
I think so.
That's the Ring of Fame, make the Wall of Fame or Hall of Fame stuff.
Is that where they're honoring the 91 Skins? Yeah. You should definitely go. You should be down there on the field. Who will they have there?
I know Charles is supposed
to go. Sunday is the third.
A few other people. I know Charles has sent it out, so it was a lot of guys he had connected with.
That'd be awesome, man. Hopefully a lot of folks are there and enjoying it. It looks like latest update I've seen on this RFK hearing, Mayor Bowser just told the D.C. Council there are plans for a new fire station as part of the RFK development. I know there had been a lot of talk about getting a new fire station over there.
I would think you want a fire station if you're putting all that new stuff over there. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure. We're pro fire stations on this program.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to mention, if you go on Instagram, there's a account called Member for a Day. Yeah. And Member for a Day gets hookups at really, really great golf courses across the country, private courses. And for charitable donations, you can go play these private courses. And so there are... two spots available. They don't have us playing together. We're playing separate, right?
Yeah.
So if you'd like to play Woodmont Country Club, which is a hell of a golf track up there in Rockville, where they have the U.S. Open qualifier every year. If you'd like to play Woodmont with either Brian or myself, check out Member for a Day. It's for a great cause. Benefits Crohn's and colitis, really awful diseases that strike people, stomach cancer, basically, right? And is that the right way of saying it. So check out Member for a Day for that. I shared it. I'm guessing B shared it. Yeah. What do you think is going on in Terry McLaurin's head right now? First off day, he reported he's been signing autographs. Like, is his head spinning? Like, is he locked in for this?
Locked in for
the holdout, like how long it's gonna go?
I don't have a clue, man. I think you should have one mind, and then when Sutton's deal is signed, I think you have to readjust. And because if you see that's how the league is going, you gotta understand. But I also feel that this team should also look at him a little bit and say, you know what? dude that's been around and been that bright spot for a while and pay a little more. I'm not saying drastic more, but a little more.
It's got to weigh on you, though, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. But that's what I said yesterday, and I'll say it over and over again. That player better realize he is the final say, not the agent.
Right. At some point, the agent might want to have some sort of record-breaking deal that, be honest, might help him sign other clients. But, like, at some point, maybe Terry's like, dude, get the best and final, and let's get this done. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and I don't know this, we can even ask it about Cosme. When they go to New England next week, would Pup guys travel for that joint practice and then the preseason game?
Do what?
Players on the Pup list. Let's just talk Cosme specifically. Do you think he'll travel next week?
I don't think so.
So then we wouldn't think Terry would travel next week, right?
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't either. Somebody yesterday at practice, I think, asked me, like, oh, you haven't been betting much on the show. And you're not incorrect. One, the training camp shows are just so busy and chaotic that it's hard. But it's also, it's just baseball. I guess you could be betting WNBA. There is stuff to be betting. We'll get back at it next week and kind of lock that in. I did want to ask the room something. I reported earlier, per sources, that Linnell Willingham ate my old salad.
Uh-huh.
And it was in one of these nice containers that my wife yells at me about.
Throw it away?
No, and I saw him after he had eaten it, and I said, hey, don't forget to give me that container. We are off the air in 2 minutes for Nats baseball. Linnell has not given me the container yet. Brian, do you think he's going to give me that container?
Probably
before
not.
Landfill, do you think he's going to remember to give me that container?
You need to go get it.
Jeffrey?
You're the one got to deal with
it. I actually think he is because he washed it out, and he said, yo, can you take this to JP? I said, no, he gave it to you. You ate out of it.
You couldn't have just brought it for me so I actually get it?
I think he's going to give it to you.
I'll be out the door in 3 minutes.
And you're going to get in trouble when you get home, so you better go get that damn thing.
Hopefully.
That hopefully didn't sound like you got that much faith. Jeff looks like a farmer in his hat right now. We need to get Jeff some overalls. Just overalls.
I have some.
Overalls
waiters.
And a tank top. Thank you to everybody that listened to the program today. Thank you to Mark Zuckerman for joining us. Zuck's about to be busy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Neil Greenberg for joining us. And thank you to John Keim for joining us. We're back in Ashburn tomorrow. If you see us, say what's up. If you see a guy that looks like Eddie George, just yell, Eddie George! Nats baseball coming your
Who's
way next.
Guy?
Mackenzie Gore on the bump. Made it this far. Linnell owes you a Tupperware container.